reservations, the name tags that you have, and envelopes with your tickets. We're largely the responsibility of Harriet Marshall and Virginia Noon Wilson and Charlie Wilson and LaVanne Hunt Richardson. Stand up, all of you. The catering committee was Arthur Tyler Barber and Dick Barber. And Dick had something to say to the class of 1930. What are you going to do about it next year, Dick? Weren't you going to meet the committee at some point? All the class of 1930. This corner over here. Don't go out into the lobby before you have first seen Dick and seen who's going to take care of this next year. Other committee members who helped every way possible, for instance, Delina Neumeyer Enos. New line for you too. And Evie Harper Briggs. Les Ernest. Milford Ellison and Alf Ellison, who's going to direct the Triple Cup and Men's Glee after. Taylor Brown, who will accompany the singing of the alma mater. Gene? And then there's the man who keeps telling me to slow down. Spence? Now you can see how successful he is. And then there's the program committee, who will take over from here while I finish drinking my wine. Lori Carr and Terry Geddes. Lori?
Actually, the class president of 29 is leaving off here.
Dorothy Harvey. San Diego High School. Never really. You were the history teacher. She was here in 1911, and she has been such a good teacher all these years, we hardly recognize that she's been with us that long. Can you stand for a second?
Okay, how about you people who are in politics of some sort?
class of officers, but how many politicians in the class? How about publications? There's a hard working group. Anyone? Ruth asked, and I know some of you have never even heard of it, but are there any here that worked on a paper lantern? What years were that? There we are. You're fine. Carrie was talking a little bit about women's sports a bit ago with rowing, and I don't know if it was intercollegiate at that time as things are now, but in sports, let's have all the people that are in sports, you know, in all the years, okay? All the sports.
across the country, lecturing, appearing, running into rather elderly, punchy, bawling men who rush up to me with great pleasure and say, I was on your program when I was 5. People say the darndest things to me. I had the sweetest little old lady of about 85 stop me in Kansas City the other day. She said, I'm probably one of your oldest fans, Mr. Linklater. And I said, well, I'm glad to hear that. Yes, she said, I've watched your career right from the beginning to the very end of it. But I'm delighted to have been able to fly back to this luncheon. I had breakfast this morning in Minneapolis. I spoke there last night at a large meeting. I spoke the night before in Chattanooga, in an interesting hotel there called the Chattanooga Choo Choo. The night before, I spoke in Columbus, Ohio. The night before that, I spoke in Indianapolis. So I get around about 110 personals a year. I travel about 250,000 miles a year. And Lois goes with me when my dates call for me to speak in Honolulu, Paris, New Orleans. Inside Saville, South Dakota, I am alone. It's been a marvelous experience to come back and see a campus that I first saw as a freshman when we helped to move the furniture from the old normal school. And I had an opportunity to make a couple of bucks off of your old E.L. Hardy and be in the loading crew, because as some of you know, those were the Depression days, and I was scrambling. I didn't have a quarter. As a matter of fact, if it weren't for some good friends here, I probably would never have been able to get through school because of the Fox family. Denver Fox and Maury and all the other Foxes were about 7 boys. I think some of them are here today. Maury, are you here? Good to see you, Maury. He remembers me as a ragtag kid running around. They stuffed me in a spare closet. I slept any place where there was space. And then later on, I started mooching off the Samuels, Gordon Samuels and his family, and I lived in their garage for a few years. I was working all over the campus at the cafeteria. My specialty was Waldorf salads. And I dare say that some of my classmates to this day are carrying around fingernails of mine from shopping today. Chopping the nuts and the apples. And incidentally, my dearest first friend was C.E. Peterson, who was my mentor and my idol, and I never forget the first orientation class the freshman had. Dear old Dean got up in front of us, and he says, we want you to be filled with enthusiasm as you go through this college, but remember these words, and I've remembered them ever since. He said, pep without purpose is piffle. Now, when that's what you remember out of 4 years of college, it certainly had a lot of strength and a lot of power. But frankly, I was here to become a physical education teacher. I wanted to be a coach. That's why the dean and I were so close. And then after a year or so, I decided that what I really loved to do was anything with words, communication. Writing, speaking, teaching. So I switched to English. And Florence Smith became my second mother. And she had such high hopes for me. She tried to get me to be nominated for a Rhodes Scholarship and a lot of other things. Years later, after I'd been quite successful, and I was writing all kinds of things for radio and shows and everything, I came back to see her and brag about what I was doing. I'll never forget, Florence looked at me with a kindly smile. She said, well, I hope the time will come, Arthur, when you will write something good. All this commercial nonsense, you know, nothing to her. And I'll never forget Dean C.E. Peterson, after I had become a Hollywood star, so to speak, and was doing well. He sent me a letter one day asking me if I would give scholarships to worthwhile kids here at the college. And in the plea, next to it, that canny old con man had attached a copy, which he had kept, of my letter begging for a scholarship. And the note on it a kind of a demanding, irascible old psychology professor. Never gave me the good grade that I really deserved. I got B pluses, but I was the brightest one in the class. I should have had A's. But he made up for it because he was running the college campus radio program at KGB, which brought various members of the faculty on a little quarter-hour show down there they were giving us. Radio station manager Lincoln Deller one day said to him, "If you ever come out there, might make a radio announcer." And Harry knew I was starving, and he would have recommended me if the job had been cleaning the flagpole on top of the building. But he did, and one day while I was making Waldorf salads right in this college cafeteria, the phone rang. I knew nothing about this. And there was a strange voice. "I'm Mr. Deller, station KGB. Would you like a job? Come down and talk to me about a job." And I said, "I'd like to go anywhere. Get me behind this steam table, out into the world." And I went down and became a radio announcer in my junior year, and worked through my senior year, still intent to be a school teacher, and enjoying every minute of it here on the campus, because when there were 12, 13, or 1400 students, if you had ambition, and you had energy, and you had curiosity, and you had perseverance, you could be everything. I wrote a column, I debated, I was a member of the rally committee, I was president of the attorney council, president of men's students, I swam, played basketball. In a college of this size today, you got to pick the thing you can do. And you're lucky if you can make it. But in those days, it wasn't all that competition. And so I had a chance to spread my wings and do all the things I dreamed of doing, which was a marvelous background for what I finally did, which was to get into the radio business. It might interest you to know that after I'd been a radio announcer for a year and I got my degree to teach English, I still had a great hankering to teach. I love to teach. I speak at many universities now. Really the highlight of my life. I want to be a teacher, but these were depression days, that was told, and you remember, those were some days, and my job as an English teacher was $120 a month. My job as a radio announcer was already paying $140 a month. So I told the superintendent or whoever I was talking to that they raised that salary and brought me up to where I already was. They had what might be a tremendous school teacher. Not as good as Larry Carr, of course, but he couldn't do it, and so for $5, I saved him radio. My whole career with Harry's Dynamis and $5. $5 a month doesn't seem like much, but in the years that have passed, I was figuring out the other day, I must be ahead $600-$700. Easy. So I became a radio announcer. Then I wanted to be a star. I thought, well, I'm being limited. I was always well organized, always writing lists of everything all the way through school. Time. I was a great time organizer, disciplined person. I wrote everything down, still do. So I wrote down all the talent of all the great stars that I heard on CBS coming through KGB. Al Jolson, Fred Allen, Burns and Allen, Eddie Cantor, all those great names. And then I wrote down my talents, and there was absolutely no cross-correlation whatsoever. There was nothing I could do that I could see that I could ever become a star. And then to show you how luck plays such a big part of the career, once again, fate stepped in. This time, not Harry's Dynamis, not $5, but a couple of young men in Texas named Butterworth and Johnson who invented a new form of entertainment, a new original art that had never been possible in the entire history of entertainment, and it was made possible by the microphone and the transmitter. What it was called Vox Populi, Voice of the People, which was a high-sounding, fashionable way of saying a man in the street broadcast. They said, let's have realism. We'll take a microphone, we'll go out in the street, we'll stop people, strangers. We'll say, who are you? What do you know? Where are you going? What's doing? And when I heard that, coming over to KGB on the CBS network, that was the light of my horizon. I said, talking? Why, that has been what has been, had me thrown out of classes for the last 14 years. And I picked up a microphone and started talking to people, and I've been talking to people for 40 years ever since. Kings and presidents and famous people and let alone people with stunts and games, originating, being the godfather and the forerunner, many of the audience kind of shows that you have on now. And of course, the one thing I'll probably be remembered for above and beyond all those things, which was the kids. And Flocky the Little Ones. See, the two best interviews in the world are women over 80 and children under 10. And for the same reason, they're the only ones that tell you what they really think. Women over 80 don't care anymore. The children under 10 don't know what they're saying. In other words, everybody else is a little hypocritical. So I stuck with the kids. And as a result of that, of course, I had 25 years of talking to these darling little kids. And I still do. I was at a big banquet in Cincinnati, the Salvation Army, about a month ago. And suddenly they brought a 8-year-old black boy up to me to interview because they helped him in one of their divisions. And I didn't expect it, and I wasn't prepared for it, but I thought, well, I'll take the crack at it. I've had a little practice. So I said, what do you like in school best, young man? He says, I like English. I said, well, I was an English teacher once almost, so I'll give you an English test. Let's see how good you are. It's your favorite subject. Well, I said, and correct this sentence. I ain't going nowhere, no how, with nobody. He looked at me and his eyes got bigger and bigger. He says, me neither. In these reminiscences, I must say that among other very, very pleasant and lucky fortuitous twists of fate turned my life probably more strongly than any of these other incidents I've been telling you about. And that was because I loved to dance. I would go to any dance in San Diego County, providing one important element was there. It had to be free. And I heard when I was a sophomore here that they had free high school dances at noon at San Diego High School. So down I would go, dear old Hazeltine, the president, principal, and there I was dancing with the young chicks in high school, and one of these young chicks has been Mrs. Winkler for 44 years. I don't think we'd be married or ever have been married if she hadn't been a great pivoter. She could pivot reverse or the other way. And so I persuaded her to come out here to San Diego State after she graduated, and I was a senior by then, and she came out here for a while, and she went to the University of Arizona. And one night out in Mission Bay, floating around a little boat, moon up, I said, honey, let's get married or something. She said, we'll get married or nothing. Those were early days. Going way back. And we got married. We had 5 children. We got 7 grandchildren. And I want to tell you, coming back today, revives and underscores and italicizes all those happy, happy memories, which all of you have similar memories, I'm sure. Things of being out here will recall to you. Now, at the age of 67, I'm not retired. I'm working harder than ever, really, because I did save my money. Lowest spend. We had a joint checking account. I didn't know what that meant.